have some wonderful things to look at today. I think in the first part of chapter 20 of Matthew, we have, I think, one of the most important parables of Jesus that gives us a clue into how differently God thinks than we do regarding mercy and grace and who gets what and why they get what and all of that. But we didn't finish 19 last week. We spent a lot of time on some important stuff in 19 about the rich young ruler and how God values children. And I think if you weren't here, it'd be really good to pick up that CD. But we only got about as far as Jesus telling this one young man who was really a good guy. He had it all. He was rich. He was young. He was a ruler. He was religious. He worked hard at trying to be right with God. And yet, all the stuff that we think, if we had what he had, we would be totally content. And yet, the whole reason that he came to Jesus was to say, something is missing. I don't get it. I'm doing all the right stuff. I have all the right stuff. I am the right stuff. Something's missing. What is it? I think you know what it is, he asks Jesus. And of course, Jesus runs through the drill. Well, you know what the law says? And he says, yeah, well, I've done that, and it doesn't work. I personally think Jesus smiles. Every time somebody says, look, I've kept all the rules religiously, and it doesn't give me peace. I don't think that makes him angry. I think that makes him smile, because that's when the good stuff starts. When I realize it's not about what I do for God, then the good news starts. It's about what God has done for me. And Jesus told this guy something that he really didn't tell anybody else that we have record of. He said, go dump everything. Give it away. Give away all your stuff. In Greek, it's kind of an immediate. It's go now and dump everything and then come and be with me. Follow me. We sang a couple of songs about it. Is a lot stronger word in the Greek vocabulary than just a geographical proximity. Jesus was going one direction and we're 30 feet behind him. It's a word of companionship. It's a word of modeling. It's a word of being. Have you ever noticed people that have been married so long that they start looking like each other? Have you ever noticed that? Boy, I pity anybody that's married to me for a long time. But I've noticed that. I've noticed people that they start looking like their pets. When they had their dog for 13 years, you start looking like a golden retriever. When there's worse things you could look like. So hold that thought. Because when Jesus said to this young man, the life that you're missing is not in keeping the rules. You'd have to be perfect for that to take you to life. And obviously you've done the best you could and there's something still missing. And he said, it's not found in all the stuff that you have, and the only way you're going to know that is to dump the stuff. I'm doing you a favor, he's saying. Torch the pile. Dump the stuff. And then, come and be with me. Can you imagine what happens when you hang out with Jesus all the time, and you start looking like him, and you start thinking like him? There's life. That's life. I joked about it in the wedding Friday night because we were talking to Karen about what a great guy Wayne is. And she said, yeah, going out with Wayne is like dating Jesus. And I that just made me smile because I thought, isn't that the way it's supposed to be? Why would it be any different if we belong to him and we're hanging out with him? So what God invited, what Jesus invited this young man to do was just, I think, inviting him to the biggest blessing that could possibly happen. Now, most people that were raised in church, as I was, have been taught, especially if you're raised in performance-based Christianity and legalism or something like that, you've always looked at this guy as a bad guy. But I think he was a good guy. And in Mark, it tells us that at the point, right before Jesus told them, go torch everything and come and be with me, it says Jesus gazed at him for a long time and loved him. So the words that he said to him were not words of scolding. They were spoken in love. A friend of mine has a discipleship ministry camp kind of thing out west, and somebody just donated to them a few years ago about 1,000 acres of prime land in Northern California. And of course, they had a big celebration, and they were honoring this man that had given them this land. And he stood up and he had tears in his eyes, and he says, "You think I just have given you a gift?" He said, I didn't do it to give you a gift. He says, "I just unloaded about 1,000 pounds of weight off my shoulders." He says, "I just unloaded on you, 1,000 acres worth of responsibility. I'm free." And so he said, "So don't thank me." He says, "I figured out something as I've been following Jesus. The less I have, the freer I am." And I don't know very many Americans that think that way. We look at God's blessing as the most stuff that we have. My friend Bill and I love to talk about the things that we learned about Jesus when everything that we owned in our lives fit in our car. I lived in my car once. 57 Chevy. Seafoam green. Ugliest color ever put on an automobile. Everything I owned in the world fit in the trunk. And I've had a lot. I've had times where I was making six figures and songwriters' royalties and had million-dollar pieces of property and lots of fabulous stuff, and then I lost all of that. The one stabilizing force in my life is Jesus. And I don't mean that in any kind of a theoretical way. I mean in the gut level, help you make it through the day, give life to your life way. Jesus is the stabilizing force. He's the life in my life. So I look at this whole thing with this young man who tried hard to do it right and then came to realize something's missing and I don't get what it is. And Jesus said, "Okay, here's the missing ingredient. Unload all that stuff and come be with me." And it says he walked away sad, and I often think that's really misunderstood. And then Jesus turned to his disciples and he says, "It's hard for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God." And we've always looked at that as the guy walked away because he didn't want to follow Jesus. And the Bible doesn't say that. In fact, I think the way I look at it is just as contextually and perhaps even more contextually accurate than what I've heard other people teach. I think he walked away and torched everything and came and followed Jesus. There's two reasons I think that. I said this last week, but it fits into what we're talking about today. The first reason why I think that he did dump it all was because Jesus said, "Go now and get rid of everything," and he went now. He was obeying. It just doesn't tell us what he did when he got to the stuff. And the second reason I believe that he got rid of it was because of the word hard, which we looked at last week. Actually, what we looked at, we did a little word search because I looked the word up in my Greek dictionary, actually several of the Greek dictionaries that I have. I looked up the word that's translated heart, and one of the synonyms was a word I didn't know, and it's the word impracticable, which I didn't even know how to pronounce it. I thought it was impracticable until I looked up the pronunciation guide. Impracticable. Here's what it means. It means incapable of being put into practice with the available means. And then all of a sudden, Jesus' comment sounds completely different to me. He turns to his disciples as this young good guy is walking away, and he says, you know what? He's not going to be able to do this by himself. And then all of a sudden, what he says a few verses later, with man it is impossible, but with God all things are possible. In a nutshell, that's the definition of impracticable. So I think he went and got rid of the stuff. And if you don't think that's true, to be perfectly fair with you, my opinion's just as good as yours, because the text doesn't tell us what he did. I was talking with somebody after church. Lots of people wanted to talk about that after church last week, because a lot of people who'd been raised the way that I was in legalistic religion had a completely different view of this guy, and all of a sudden it became a thrilling story. But one brother said this, and I thought this was really good. He said, what if the reason that he went away sad, it says he went away sad because he had a lot of stuff. What if the reason he went away sad was because he realized he'd wasted all of his energy on religion and accumulating stuff? And he walked away and he says, what was I thinking? It was right here in front of my nose all this time, and I wasted all that time. And I thought, well, I've been there. I think, and this is what I thought when I read this story, I just remembered when I was driving my 95 Isuzu Trooper, pulling a U-Haul from Washington State out to here, and friends that I'd had my whole life, and the place I loved better than any place on the earth was all in my rearview mirror. And I was driving out here for only one reason, because Jesus said, I want you to move to Maine. I didn't want to. It wasn't my choice. It wasn't the most beautiful place I could think of, although it is pretty. Everything that I loved, that I'd had my whole life, I was laying down. And I don't know how you can do that, no matter how much you love Jesus. I don't know how you can do that without being sad. I don't think he expected me to not be sad. So I'm driving out here, and I cried all the way across the United States. I still came. I still obeyed. And I'll be here the rest of my life if that's what he wants. So sometimes the call to follow and the call to dump your own plan, God doesn't make it easy for us, because sometimes it's supposed to be hard. So that's the way I look at this guy, and I think all of that sort of fits very well into the rest of chapter 19, where Peter says the thing, as he often did, that everybody else was thinking, but nobody had the guts or the transparency to say. He says, well, Jesus, we left everything. We did. We left everything. So what's in it for us? And that's such a childish thing. But I just love that Jesus didn't scold him. I probably would have. When Jesus said, well, you know, you guys, when everything is renewed, at the final renewal of everything, which I love that word, is the word, Fred, is the word anakinos there in, I didn't look it up, I'm sorry. At the word renewal. Where is it? Verse 28. At the renewal of all things. I don't know. He's reading feverishly in his Greek Bible. It's not anakinos, okay. But it's a word that means the same thing that anakinos means. It means made new again, basically. It means everything being made new, that's our future, by the way. So I wouldn't get too upset if you see the world crumbling around you, which it is. All my tree hugger friends aren't going to save it. All the recycling isn't going to save it. It's a disposable container, and it is going to be remade. And the future of this planet is in the same place that our future is. It's in the fact that Jesus is going to rule and reign here and redo everything. But Jesus said at that point to these guys, you know, you guys are going to sit in positions of authority over the whole, over your whole nation. And then he says something really I want to spend a little bit of time on today. And then when we get to chapter 20, I'll just read through like we usually do, and we'll look at this parable. Verse 29 of chapter 19. Everyone who has left houses or brothers or sisters or father or mother or mother or wife, some manuscripts say, or children or fields for my sake will receive 100 times as much, Mark adds, in this present life. And then parenthetically, along with persecutions, we've got to tell you the whole story. It's not going to all be fun. And will, in the age to come, inherit eternal life. Last week I told you that that word for life that's used a couple of times here is the word for life with a capital L. Life on every plane of existence. Not just biological life. But many who are first will be last, and many who are last will be first. And to fully appreciate the next parable, which is directly connected to that statement, Jesus will repeat it at the end of the parable, and then Jesus will talk to his disciples about their idea of what being first and last means. And we'll look at that in a few minutes, and we'll look at the rest of that whole teaching next week. But let me just dwell on this promise, because it is a promise. For a rich young ruler, the hard thing wouldn't just be to dump the stuff. The hard thing would be to follow and to not be a ruler anymore. Like Carol said so eloquently, to realize that I'm not in charge anymore. That is the one thing that derails more people than any other thing in the Christian life, is they want to still be in charge. So part of what Jesus was inviting this young man to, besides dumping the stuff, which he would know, Jesus knows that that's, you're just going to feel free. You're going to feel freer than you ever have. But you're also going to not be in charge anymore. And for some people who are used to being in charge, that's hard. Can I just give you a little clue into my psyche, which you may or may not care about? I would rather do something myself that I know won't even work than to have to totally let go. Isn't that silly? It's that control thing. And when these men came to Jesus, as Peter said, Lord, you came, you told me to drop my nets and let go of my livelihood. I did. By the way, Jesus, you didn't exactly tell me what I was going to do after that. In fact, Jesus, you still haven't. I still don't have a clue where you're going, where this is all going. Well, yeah, he did tell them over and over where it was going, but it wasn't what they wanted to hear. So he didn't listen very hard. But that whole thing of just letting go of your self-determination. I've talked to a number of folks, and I have nothing against you. You know, you have to live your life the way you live your life, and I live mine the way I live mine. But most of the people that I know that are here are living in Maine because they want to. You pick this place because you didn't like where you're living, and you lived here because you want to. Except for Fred and Nancy. And myself and a couple of other people. So you may not understand that getting up every day and doing what we're doing is an exercise in obedience and contentment. Learning to be content where we are because it wasn't our choice. You know, if God had given me my choice, I would probably have stayed right where I was. And of course, I would have missed out on all of the wonderful things that he wants to do and has wanted to do since I have been here. But that whole thing of running our Christian life by making choices and decisions that allow me to still have control, That's just an oxymoron. Walking in obedience to the Lord and being more and more totally His, folks, I hate to tell you this, but I have to tell you this. It means you're going to have less control. What does it mean to trust God more? It means that you have more entrusted to Him. And what having more entrusted to Him means you have less control. Now, if you're like me, I don't like that. Lord, can we have a thing going on here where I trust you and I still get to be in control? Let's do that. But see, it just can't work that way. So I think that hard thing that he asked him to do of the two, dumping the stuff and living your life for Jesus' agenda, I've experienced it myself. The stuff comes and the stuff goes. I've been rich, I've been poor, more than once. The stuff comes, the stuff goes, that's no big deal. The living your life following somebody else, that's a different story. I tell you what makes it easier. It's not just the promise. Oh, don't worry, this is all going to work out. It's not just that promise. We have lots of promises like that, and some of them are right here in this text. It's that I have Him. If He's my life, if He's my strength, if He's not the genie in the bottle, if He's not the vending machine I go to get what I want, if it's Him, if that companionship with Him is my life, there's such great blessing. It's more than worth it 100 times over to do whatever it is that He asks me to do. There is a wonderful promise in verse 29 where He says, anybody that's ever left anything for me will receive 100 times more in this present life, Mark says. Yeah, the whole story is, yeah, there's going to be persecution because you're in hostile territory. And then there's even more in the life to come. I wrote down 5 things that are present rewards of being a Christian, of giving our lives up for Him, that are present rewards. And then they're just things I looked at. It's interesting that there were things that I looked at when I was having to leave all my treasures behind me. Yeah, I have you. I have wonderful friends here, but I didn't know that when I left all my friends behind. I have a neat little 230-year-old cape that I'm fixing up on a lake, but as far as I know, I was leaving everything. I was never going to have anything. I left it all behind. So when I read through this passage, I read this list because God had proven it to me time and time again. What are some of the present rewards? Now, this is my list. You can make your own if you want to. And it's not in any particular order because Jesus said, whatever you have left behind to belong to me and to fulfill my purpose, oh, don't worry. It's going to be so worth it. Thing number one is true friends. Does that mean that the people you had before you came to Jesus weren't real friends? Oh, no, not necessarily. But if they don't know Jesus, they would be better friends if they did. Whatever it is that you have left behind, like-minded people. Somebody sent me a card one time with this scripture, and then they filled in the blanks after these statements of left houses or land or friends, and of course they put in, you know, hairy organic Christians and islands and beautiful pleasant climates in the Northwest and all this stuff that I left, knowing that it was very encouraging. I have discovered, and I wouldn't have discovered if I had just hung out with people that were exactly like me, I've discovered that you can have people that are true friends that are different than you. I can't think of 2 people, maybe, that are more unalike than me and Bill. Or me and Fred. We're very different people. Except we love each other. and I would give my life for you. And I would do that for Belle. And it's, you know, how would you know that if you only hung out with people that were exactly like you? You wouldn't know that. See, I wouldn't have known these guys if I was still living on my island, being a hermit in Washington and only going and singing where I wanted to go. So, security is thing number two. Now, this is the thing you will not believe me until you do it. One of my friends used to say, Bob, your life, I could never live your life. You have invisible means of support. And to them, because I didn't get a paycheck, they thought, how can you live that way? But see, I looked at exactly the opposite of that. I said, your boss could drop dead tomorrow, or get mad at you and fire you, or the president could, you know, change the way the economy runs, or Congress, and you could lose your job in a heartbeat. But I said, I have absolute job security. My boss is never going to die. He's never going to stop loving me. He has a perfect plan. He's never once stopped taking care of one of his children, ever. I made a deal with God in the very beginning when I gave him my life. I said, I will do whatever you want. Here's all the stuff in my pockets. I do music, you know, here's the stuff I can do, but I'll do whatever you want. And you can pay me or not pay me, whatever you want.